49.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Hey, aren't you sick and tired of people running for public office here in the Pacific Northwest and promising that they will serve the people of the state they're elected in? And in this case, I'm talking about crooked Attorney General Nick Brown. Because Nick Brown, the Attorney General of the state of Washington, has decided to total the hopes of young men and women who are Americans who want to go out and get a job in the STEM field for the most part. That's where they use these H-1B work visas to bring in foreign nationals to do the work instead of hiring Americans. I'm going to dig into this in just a moment, but first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to take your calls. The Radio Northwest Network has served the Pacific Northwest states for almost 30 years, but we always invite your input. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, boy, naysayers go to the head of the line always, always have, and always will. You can also vote in our X poll. And this is a fairly simple question. Do you get your money's worth from the taxes you pay to Northwest governments, whether it's Oregon, Washington, or Idaho? Imagine this. There is a brand new list out. It was actually put out by State Representative Ed Deal from Washington State. He points out that from Oregon, Ed is a representative in Oregon. The government in Oregon takes more of your money per capita than most every other state in America. Not all of them. Oregon isn't the worst, but it is close to the worst. It is fifth in state and local government spending per capita. So, if you take a look at the money pulled out of your pocket and then spent allegedly to benefit you, although I could point out about 100 different places where the state of Oregon spends money to benefit illegal aliens, to benefit criminals, to benefit various sexual causes or political causes, they don't spend the money to serve you and your family. Unless, of course, you happen to be in one of those categories. I imagine we probably have at least a few illegal aliens listening to this show. We probably also have a few criminals listening to the show, or former criminals, as the case may be. But imagine that. They pull in all that money, and then out of the entire country, including Washington, D.C., Oregon ranks fifth in state and local government per capita. In other words, take the entire amount of money they take, the amount of money they spend, and then divide it by the number of people in the state. California is fourth, so California is worse, but Washington State, much better. They come in 15th place. And the state of Idaho, the other state in our Radio Northwest Network territory, they come in 49th in America. In other words, they spend less per capita, now if you say, well, you get what you pay for, well, do you think you actually get what you pay for? If the state of Oregon now ranks in the top five for spending per capita, do you feel as though that spending actually benefits you and your family? And the reason I ask that, I can give you examples like the ones we've given to you. The Portland metro area spending about two-thirds of $1 billion in a single year on the so-called homeless. That's to benefit 6,000 or 8,000 people. I mean, Puget Sound and the state of Washington are not much better. But in any case, do you get your money's worth from Northwest governments? I would argue you don't, so I'm answering no. You can answer the question any way you like. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, let me get back to these H-1B work visas, because I thought, while I don't agree with everything Donald Trump has said, I do agree with what he said about H-1B work visas. How do those things work? Well, a company any company in America can say, we can't possibly find the talent we need to do this job. There's some specialty, but we found the perfect person in India or Australia, or we found them in Western Europe, or we might have even found them in South America, and we'd like to bring them here to do the job because we can't find Americans who are capable of doing that job. That's why Congress allows tens of thousands of H-1B work visas. But what's supposed to happen is the company is supposed to say, we've tried everything we can to find somebody with those talents here in America among Americans or green card aliens, and we can't find the person. So let us bring somebody in. That's what they're allowed to do. The current fees run anywhere from, say, $1,000, which is a throwaway amount, up to $7,000 or $8,000 to bring in an H-1B. Donald Trump said, no, let's raise that to $100,000. Now, I know that some of you would hear that and say, well, hold on, what's he trying to do? You know what he's trying to do? He's trying to say that when Intel or Microsoft or Boeing or any other company or even a small company you've never heard of, when they say there is this person somewhere on planet Earth who has the skills and talents to do this job, and we have not been able to find a young man or woman here in America to do the job, if you're serious and you say they have these unique talents, then go ahead, pay the $100,000. It'll be well worth your money. I mean, right now, some of the companies are paying as much as $7,000 or $8,000 to bring that person in. Do you know what it prevents? It prevents the kinds of things we've been hearing about, especially over the last decade, where a company says, hey, we've got all these Americans doing this job, but you know, if we hire a whole bunch of people from China or India or some other country, they will work for less, they will work harder, and we basically own them. Because H-1B visas are a kind of form of indentured servitude. If you take one of those visas and you come to work for a company here, they effectively own you if you're a foreign national, because you can't leave that job. Or if you do leave the job, your visa goes away and boom, you're kicked back out of the country. So it's like bringing indentured servitude back. So obviously the Democrats love it. What's happening now? Trump says, let's make sure that you're actually serious and you've actually tried to find some American talent. The $100,000 fee is for the foreign worker. If you hire a good American man or woman to do that job, you don't have to pay the $100,000. A lot of companies would follow that. So what have the attorneys general done? Well, Nick Brown from Washington State, the AG there, Dan Rayfield from Oregon, the AG there, have joined in with the other 18 hardcore left-wing blue state governors of liberal states around America, and they have brought a lawsuit. In other words, they're suing for the opportunity to give American jobs away to foreign nationals and deny them to young men and women. One of the statistics I like to remind people of, there are a lot of young men and women who followed the advice of politicians and their teachers, and they went off and got a STEM degree, a degree in science, technology, engineering, or mathematics. And then they went out with their STEM degree and said, I'm trying to find a job, but nobody's hiring. They're hiring people from other places on the planet. So about 75% of the young men and women in this country who have a STEM degree do not have a job in the STEM field. You think that's kind of strange. The politicians are still telling my son or daughter that they should get a STEM degree. Isn't it worth anything? Not when you can hire a cheaper, harder working foreign national who belongs to you, like the kinds of slaves that the Democrats have always loved. Glad to have you with me. Glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. If you've been
sick, use the right safety seat. Buckle up. It's the way to go. A message from ODOT.
Sergeant Jabari Wright.
In the Army, I was trained as a combat lifesaver. In 2012, had an accident and became paralyzed. I was used to working in healthcare, and how am I supposed to help people when I'm in a wheelchair now? It really severely impacted my confidence.
Jim Arndt, PAVE Program, Paralyzed Veterans of America.
PAVE helps veterans rebuild lives with valuable careers. We assess the skills, build the resumes, and help with the interviewing skills to be able to find a career that our veterans are looking for.
PVA took what I was doing in the military and helped me translate that to meaningful employment in the civilian sector. Hooking up with them helped to empower me.
PAVE really concentrates on the one-on-one relationships. Unlike other programs that measure success by placements alone, PAVE places greater emphasis on quality jobs and continued support, our Partner for Life guarantee.
To learn more, visit pva.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Follow the Lars Larson Show on X at Lars Larson Show. You never know what he'll post. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
I've got a fair warning for you. If you tolerate lies and dishonesty from the government, you're guaranteed to get a lot more. Think about that as you absorb today's news that government officials from both Oregon and Washington have refused to tell the people's representatives the estimated cost of the interstate bridge replacement. In fact, we've been in the dark for almost 3 years now. A dozen years ago, these cheats promised lawmakers in both states that bridge would cost $3.5 to $5 billion. And then just a few years later, before the inflation of the Biden years, the cost jumped to $5 billion to $7.5 billion. That's quite a jump, more than double. That was in 2022. Since then, they have not been willing to say. Since then, these so-called public servants running the interstate bridge replacement have refused to tell taxpayers their new cost estimate. Representative John Lee has been dogging this subject for years. He can't get the answer that we all want. And the guy running the show, Greg Johnson, just announced he's leaving his $300,000 a year job as the captain of this financial Titanic. I figure Johnson knows the new number is going to hit $10 billion or more, nearly three times the original cost from just 12 years ago. So he's getting off the boat before it sinks. Now, do you have any doubt that if you or I worked for a company and we were ramrodding a project and the boss came up and said, "Hey, Lars, how much is that going to cost?" And I said, "I'm not going to tell you." You think you'd be looking for a fresh pink slip in your paycheck instead? Only government doesn't work that way around here. Glad to be with you and glad to get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Steve Gorham writes, "Lars, the state of Washington has been so confused for so long. They want to protect illegal alien individuals, and all they're not watching out for are the American citizens paying taxes and paying their jobs. What, when will Washingtonians wake up? Do you have other issues bigger than illegal aliens? It's up to you. Washingtonians and Oregonians, swim or die. Love your show. Enjoy the day, because you're right. They're wrong. Let's get back down to business." Signed, Steve. And my favorite post on X today. Because of that shooting at Brown University, the police are refusing to say what the Brown University shooter yelled before opening fire and murdering two people. Witnesses say he shouted "Allahu Akbar." Why are the police and the university covering this up? And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to the entire criminal justice system that lets things like this happen, and it happens all the time in the Northwest. A man accused of repeatedly stealing from Plaid pantry stores in Portland has been indicted by a grand jury on 58 counts of theft, and then released from jail just one day later, only to allegedly reoffend, meaning he did it again almost immediately. The case has frustrated the retailer, worried store clerks, and exposed what the Multnomah County DA calls a strained and imperfect justice system. Apparently, Nathan Vasquez cannot figure out how to get around that. Our best email of the day, but you can always send more, to talk@LarsLarson.com. Dave Gray writes in, "Lars, I live in Kent, Washington. I'm a customer of PSE, Puget Sound Energy. Today, they sent me a survey asking if I'm concerned about climate change and did I want to drive an electric car. There was no place to put in opinions. So after I took the survey, I wrote customer service. I thought you might enjoy it. I just took your customer survey. You asked all the wrong questions. I think if it's the left-leaning politicians in this state forcing you to do the wrong things. In the survey, I said I'm not concerned about climate change. It's not man-made carbon that's changing things. CO2 is plant food. If we had a little less of it, plants would die. Now that we have more of it, plants are growing better. As a result, at least some places are cooler. Politicians want you to encourage everything electric and don't want you to produce any electricity. I want to keep natural gas in my home. It's the most efficient way to heat things. I work building rocket engines. All three of the big new rockets in this country use liquefied natural gas because it's cheap and it's efficient and it's clean and abundant. But the stupid politicians in this state want to take it away from us. Why can't I use and PSE use a fuel that is cheap, clean, efficient, and abundant? I think you might find there are more of us out here who think this way if you would only ask. But the politicians want you to do dumb things to be politically correct. If everybody drove an electric car, you would not be allowed to produce the electricity enough to handle the load. Stop the madness, signed Dave Gray. To your calls now. Let's start with Jeff and Ben. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thanks for I thought I heard you say that the Portland Metro County spent $750 million on 6,000 homeless people. Is that correct?
I said 6,000 to 8,000 because the estimates vary and they play games with that number all the time. But the 752 is accurate. 752 for the metro region, meaning City of Portland, Multnomah County, to some extent Washington and Clackamas counties, $752 million or about $2 million a day.
Yeah, that's $93,000 a person at 8,000 people. And
yes, it is.
That is nothing short of criminal. And every single person in the state should be outraged to think that they take our money and they pay homeless people or use it to put them in jail
and let them shoot drugs more than the average person earns. Jeff, the thing you're missing, and I understand why you'd miss it. You think they're spending all that money on the person that you raised the money for, right? They're not. They're employing
lots. Oh, no, I know exactly what they're spending it on.
Tell me.
Well, they're spending $185,000 on a guy who runs the Shepherd's House in Bend, Oregon.
Yep.
It's a nonprofit
yep.
that makes almost $200,000.
And by the way, he's getting chump change compared to the heads of NGOs in the Portland Metro. Some of them make north of $300,000 a year to run an agency that doesn't have any metrics for success. Meaning, you know, if in your job or my job, the boss can say, so how are your numbers? I mean, almost anybody in any job has numbers. A guy who cuts trees down has numbers. I cut down 50 trees today, boss. You can tell them numbers. When it comes to homeless, you say, we serve the people. And you don't have to show any progress or results at all, and you still make a lot of money. And, of course, those people making $300,000 are employing a lot of people, paying them full-time wages to walk around and talk to homeless people and not change the situation not one little bit. And that's where most of that money is getting. I'd be willing to bet that 10 cents on the dollar might actually reach the man or woman, the drug addict, living on the streets. Jeff, thanks for the call. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
Larson Show. Portland inside Lars's studio. Follow him on Instagram at the Lars Larson Show. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for almost 30 years now. You know, entire towns are underwater as widespread historic flooding has gripped the state of Washington. Oregon has flooding problems as well, and landslides as well. Should the state start building more flood control projects or just let nature take its course? Now, I'm going to talk about that at some point with Representative Jim Walsh. He represents to the 19th Legislative District. We'll wait for Representative Walsh to join us. But I want to point something out before I take some of your calls. My friend Ari Hoffman, he does the afternoon talk show after mine on KVI, our affiliate station in Seattle. And he titled this one, A Tale of Two Washingtons, and I couldn't agree more. There was a picture from Mount Vernon, Washington, which had installed a flood wall to protect its downtown from flooding. Now, it's a temporary flood wall. It's made up of metal panels. I believe they're aluminum panels, which is great because the Pacific Northwest at least used to produce a lot of aluminum. But these big metal panels are held up by big angled braces, and they're holding back the river. Now, that's Mount Vernon, Washington, a fairly small town. Meanwhile, what is happening in King County, Washington, the single most populous and biggest government county in the entire state. Well, in Seattle, in King County, they are monitoring the situation. Yeah, they watched the levee until it broke. The levee's been in bad shape for about 5 years now. And then they use what are called seepage blankets that are intended to try to slow that down. So it sounds like Mount Vernon knows better how to protect its town than all the rocket scientists in King County. Representative Jim Walsh joins me now. Hey, Representative Walsh, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, it's good to talk to you, boy. There is just a lot of water flowing all around western Washington right now. And you hit it exactly. I mean, a lot of the traditional approaches, traditional solutions, fixing up these levees when they break or they erode. Stuff we knew 40, 50, 80 years ago is working better than some of the new ideas about how to alter our environment, Lars.
Well, and one of the things that frustrates, I always gripe about California because they're constantly either got too much water or too little water. They're either in drought or they're drowning. I mean, one or the other. And a lot of hydrologists have made the point over the years, which the state, their state legislature doesn't listen to. They say, you know, if you build all those flood control projects and dams that have been proposed and paid for by bonding authority that was given to them by the voters, they're sitting on billions of dollars. They could be building these things right now, but they don't. And if they had all those projects during the dry years, they'd have plenty of water to, you know, get them through, tide them through until the next rains come. And when the rains come, you can hold enough of it back to at least stop the catastrophic flooding. And I guess I'd be six kinds of hypocrite if I didn't say, well, maybe Oregon and Washington should be doing the same thing. Why aren't we?
A bunch of reasons, Lars. That's a great question. A lot of it has to do with politics, no shock there. And the well-meaning but screwed up approach to trying to save and restore fish runs. You know, all this talk of saving the fish, and I believe it is intended, Lars. I believe they mean well to restore some of the fish runs for those spawning fish, you know, your salmon, your steelhead, fish like that.
Yeah.
It's basically dominated the conversation to a bad place. We need proper use of dams, or I'm sorry, Lars, water retention facilities. We could use water retention facilities. And these conversations are going on, but the environmentalists arguing to protect the fish are against any kind of logical, sensible use of dams and facilities. And,
well, let me ask you about that, though. Doesn't BPA, doesn't Bonneville Power admit they've spent about $1 billion in the last 10 years on habitat restoration and all the rest of that nonsense? And they admit it doesn't appear to have made any difference. So if that's the result of all this, you know, let's restore the environment. You know, I'm not saying kill all the fish. But if we're talking about relatively low dams, we're not talking about McNary, we're not talking about Bonneville, we're not talking about Cooley, we're talking about relatively low flood control dams, and it would seem that putting fish ladders in those wouldn't be rocket science if you built them in when you did those. And I understand that there have been dams that could have addressed things like flooding that usually happens near Centralia, Chehalis, and places like that. Can't we do that and service the fish as well?
I believe we can, Lars. I believe that's right. And fish ladders do work. Of course, you're right, not on the monster mega dams, but on standard water retention dams and water control dams. Fish ladders work. And we've got technology to help the fish around. And we got hatcheries that we're not funding, Lars. We got other ways to restore the fish runs. And I wanted to point out, too, another thing with all this flooding going on that we've lacked and fallen back on is we used to they call it dredging. It's if you know water systems, they really call it scraping, but it's a kind of dredging that you do on river systems.
Yeah,
we used to do that. The Army Corps used to be more involved in that. But again, this well-intended but misbegotten approach trying to save fish and the environment has restricted that scraping. That's dredging out the rivers to try to get rid of the sort of sediment you get in there and the stuff that blocks up the water flow.
Yeah, it makes the pipe smaller for the water, right? So if you dredge from the bottom and you dump it on the side, you know what? I'm no engineer, but that sounds like you would strengthen the levee and make the levee bigger, taller, stronger, less likely to break like the ones that are broken and put Tukwila in danger and places like that.
That's exactly right. We need to get back to doing that. And this is stuff our grandfathers and great-grandfathers knew. And we've forgotten just common sense river system management. All why? Because of, you know, the green energy, green economy, green ecology ideology. We've forgotten the common sense stuff we knew. That, I mean, look, there are going to be water system floods. There are going to be issues. But we used to manage them better, Lars, and we need to relearn some of that stuff we've forgotten.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if you just said, look, we're going to do these things, and we're going to take wildlife into account. And frankly, if you start backing up water somewhere, so you say most of the time we let it run through. But if we know a bunch of big rain is coming and we get warning days ahead, you can empty those reservoirs to a certain extent if they're flood control. And then when the rain comes, you hold back 2 or 3 feet and the next dam holds back 2 or 3 feet. And all of a sudden, Mrs. Johnson's house is not underwater. It doesn't seem complicated to me.
And when the waters recede from Mrs. Johnson's house, there are a bunch of dead fish in the water.
Exactly right. That is Representative Jim Walsh. He represents the 9th district in the state of Washington. Sorry, 19th district in the state of Washington. Representative Walsh, thanks so much. I appreciate the time. Back in just a moment. And why is it Arla or Mount Vernon does a better job of protecting against flood than even King County, Washington? You got the Lars Larson Show.
This is your home for honestly provocative talk radio. The truth every day. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And this segment is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. I love the emails. Merlin writes in. He heard Representative Walsh talking about dredging the rivers. He says, what if we let gold retention companies dredge the rivers? It might be a self-funding venture with gold at $4,300 an ounce. Just trying to think outside the tax stealing box in an effort to return power to the people. And I couldn't agree with you more. Let me go to first to Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer, welcome to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. You know, I know you are a big supporter of Donald Trump, and I just want to get your, I would just be curious to know, you know, when you hear things that he tweets and says, like, about the death of Rob Reiner. Do you cringe a little bit? Like, oh, God, I gotta, you know, how am I going to defend Donald on this one?
No, but hold on. You apparently don't listen to the show much. You didn't listen yesterday.
Oh, no,
sure.
I just turned you on. I listen all the time, Lars.
That's why it kind of sounds like a seminar caller, because I went on at length about Trump yesterday, and I said I completely disagreed.
You did.
Yes,
good
I did.
For you.
Well, but here's the thing, Jennifer. Do you have fast friends that you're absolutely devoted to, but occasionally they say something stupid? Now, if you have any guts, you call your friend out on that stupid stuff, don't you?
I wish I would have heard you. I know every once in a while.
You got to listen every day. You know what happens to talk show hosts that don't have anybody listening? We don't suffer from
They're
that.
They're no longer...
They go away. They end up as a Walmart greeter. I mean, I might someday be a Walmart greeter. But no, Trump said something stupid. It was an unforced error, and I don't know why he did it. I mean, for the life of me, Jennifer, there are people in public positions that I absolutely despise. I mean, people like Neil Goldschmidt, the former governor of Oregon, raped a 13-year-old girl for 2.5 years. Never indicted for it, and he can sue me if he wants to. Do I have anything good to say about him? No. But if he had been...
You wouldn't say something when he's... Right.
If he had been murdered, I might simply point out these are the things I remember about him. But in Trump's case, Trump, threw it off to TDS. And I think there are plenty of liberals who get themselves in trouble with TDS. You're not one of them, are you?
You said TDS?
Yeah. Do you suffer from TDS?
Oh, God, I don't even think that's a real thing. I think Donald made...
You don't think that there are people deranged over Donald Trump who are just beside themselves as they, the Bible would describe somebody as beside themselves. It meant they were crazy.
I would say it's not out of nowhere that he drives people crazy. I mean, no. I think people are very angered by Donald Trump.
Well, but hold on. Jennifer, tell me what makes, other than, and I would agree, the comments about Rob Reiner were unnecessary, and they weren't even on point. If they'd been on point, like if I said, well, Neil Goldschmidt raped a 13-year-old girl, you'd say, well, that's probably on point because he did do that. But what is it that makes you the maddest about Donald Trump? What's the number one thing?
I think that he's made our country like it is now. If you ask
Hold on. What is the like it is now? You mean like the lowest gas prices in 5 years?
I care about more than that. I care more about the state of the human beings in our country. If you ask
but what about human beings? For instance, Jennifer, when Donald Trump says a bunch of illegal aliens have invaded your country, they're living in houses they have no...
Okay, let me answer that.
When he says, I'm going to boot them out of the country, doesn't that benefit the other three?
He's not getting... This whole ICE thing that has everybody up in arms,
some
are on this side, some are on this side of it. I know, because you're on the one side.
No, but why would you support somebody stealing from your country?
I don't support people stealing from my country. What I don't support, though, is masked men popping up out of nowhere with taking people that aren't murderers and not rapists, taking them away from their family.
Well, hold on, Jennifer, if they're breaking the law, and we know that
Trump,
you want me to go down the list, Jennifer? I'll go down the list. I can do it. No, would you like to hear the list? Would you like to hear the list, Jennifer?
Well, Donald Trump is a felon, so I don't know that I think the hard work.
When you cross the border into the United States, you've broken a law. Uh-huh. When you remain in the United States, you've broken a law. When you work illegally in this country, you've broken a law. If you're using a fake Social Security number or somebody else's Social Security number, you're breaking the law. Isn't that enough law breaking to say?
People did not want Trump to do that. They wanted him to get out the dangerous people.
Where did you get that? Because when Donald Trump said, I will have the biggest mass deportation in American history, he said, we will start with the violent criminals. But Jennifer, are you suggesting that when ICE goes out and they say, we're looking for this guy, he's a convicted killer. He's a member of Tren de Aragua. We're going to arrest him.
Get him.
Haven't heard the question yet, Jennifer. I know you want to answer that one.
But I want you to get that guy out of there.
Okay, but hold on. When they, on the way to that guy, find five other illegals, should they ignore them?
In the school pickup line?
Wherever you find them.
In the school pickup line, Lars?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I mean, you see what I'm saying. I mean, come on.
Why is it wrong to object? Look, is your school district overfunded right now? Are they telling you, we got so much money, Jenny, we can't spend it all? Or do they tell you they're chronically short of everything?
Well, listen, there's all kinds
of... No, please answer. Jennifer, you engage the conversation. Tell me the answer. Does your school district say, we are chronically short on everything and that's why we're failing your kids? Is that what your local school district says?
I don't have kids. I don't know.
Do you care whether the schools work for kids or not?
There's some school districts that are better than others. I think
Do you know of a single one that says we have so much money it's spilling out of our pockets?
You know what? I think less money needs to go to war and bombs and more go to...
Which wars? And Donald Trump is getting us out of wars and Joe Biden got us into wars, right?
Well, I don't know. What would you say about Venezuela?
I think it's cheap to go out and bomb a bunch of drug dealers out of existence. It sounds cheap to me. Now, on the other hand, Ukraine, that would be Joe Biden's war, President Otto Penn. That one was a couple of $100 billion. Jennifer, it's great to have a good naysayer, and God bless you, and Merry Christmas. I hope I didn't offend Jennifer by wishing her a Merry Christmas. It is the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, it's not just the weather and the rain and the floods and the landslides that are ripping apart Oregon's coastline. I've been talking about Washington State and the floods there, but on the Oregon coastline, things are being torn apart, but they're also being torn apart, even when the rain isn't falling, by what is going on in the various counties to law enforcement, and specifically to the people who decide who gets prosecuted, who gets convicted, and who ends up going to jail. And to talk about that, I invited Josh Marquis on, former vice president of the National DA's Association and former president of the Oregon DA's Association. Josh, welcome back. And would you mind describing what I think you've described as the coastline of Oregon with unelected county bureaucrats trying to dismantle the DA's office? And what's their agenda? Why are they doing this?
Well, this has been a problem for some time. People may remember that when I was DA back in 2008, the county commissioners, basically in my county, tried to drive me out by basically cutting off my county pay, which constituted about 20% of my pay, just cutting it off for no reason. And so it's not personal anymore. I've retired. So what's going on in Clatsop County and in Tillamook County and in Lincoln County, separate but not separate from each other, is in each of those counties, the county commissioners are trying to get involved in the inner operations of the DA's office, something that is essentially illegal in Oregon. The district attorney is an independent state officer. The voters in each county elect the district attorney, and the district attorney is paid for by the state. And there's a reason for that. You want your district attorney to be independent, particularly of the local petty politics that happens, particularly in small towns. So what's happening, for example, in Clatsop County?
Well, in fact, since you made it personal at the beginning, let me bring this out. Can we say that Astoria at one point had a guy as mayor who loved to get drunk and picked up DUIs, didn't he?
He was a charming fellow, but he also racked up 3 drunk driving convictions.
Okay, right. but he didn't want the local DA to prosecute him because, you know, he wanted to be handled by the municipal court. So you can imagine what would happen in a county if the officials of the county, say the city councils and the county commission, were to be in charge of the DA and he answered to them and got his paycheck from them. They could say, yeah, you shouldn't prosecute Willis. Willis just likes to get drunk and drive down the road, right?
Certainly, that's one of them. I mean, we made our peace, but that, you actually put your finger on it. What you need is a district attorney, basically, who isn't going to care how prominent somebody is and will prosecute without fear or favor or promise of reward. And in small towns in particular, it's particularly important in smaller communities that the kinds of pressures that can easily be brought subtly to say, well, these certain people just should be left alone, whether it's drugs or drunk driving or any number of things. And so what's really spooky is, and again, in Lincoln County, you've got the county commissioners basically saying who the DA can hire. And in one case, basically, they haven't had a district attorney in Lincoln County that has served more than one term in 20 years. I worked there a long time ago, almost 30 years ago, and it's a fine county. But one, you can't get people to stay there. There's a relatively new district attorney in Tillamook. She's a former state trooper. She's a really good prosecutor. But we've got the Tillamook County commissioners mucking with her. And the county I used to be DA, and I've been gone for 5 years, the county is trying to say who the DA can hire and who they can't hire as lawyers. I mean, this goes to the very core, and you're absolutely right. What it ends up being is, who are you prosecuting and who are you making unhappy with basically enforcing the law?
Now, why is it you think these county commissioners, I want you to guess or give me your best estimate, why do they think they have the authority to do this, or are they just counting on that nobody is going to call them out for doing it? When they take control and start telling the DA how to dance, that they know nobody's going to call us out.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I certainly experienced this when I was DA. Most people in most counties all over Oregon don't pay much attention to the DA's office unless the wheels literally come off, which is,
you mean,
course,
like Multnomah County under Schmidt?
Like Multnomah County with Mike Schmidt. It's one of the reasons Nathan Basker has got elected, is things were so bad. But usually they don't get so bad, and most of the time most people don't know about it. They don't know about it until it happens to them. And so I can't believe it's coordinated, but basically, unless these district attorneys or their organization rise up and say, wait a minute, we're going to legally challenge this, the things in Lincoln County and Newport, this has been going on for 2 or 3 years, and they've literally been having the elected DAs walk out the door, and they're getting away with it because, once again, it's not the kind of thing that affects most people until, heaven forbid, a member of your family is murdered or raped. And then you start hearing a lot about it.
But then that's only one family. So tell me this. You used to head the Oregon DA's Association. What are these other DAs saying when they see DAs being manipulated elsewhere in the state? You'd think their association would stand up and lodge use their bully pulpit to lodge a complaint and say, you can't do this to DAs. They are supposed to be independent arbiters of who gets charged and who doesn't, right?
Right. In fairness, I'm not privy to that anymore. I haven't lived.
Have you seen any sign that Oregon DA's Association is objecting to what's going on?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I know that there are good people now in leadership positions. There's a lot of pressure often brought to sort of leave counties alone, and it's very hard for district attorneys in one county to affect who you go to. I mean, you go to the governor of this state and say, have them cut it out, or the attorney general? Probably
how about
not.
just use the bully pulpit? If you go to the public and say, 35 yeah. other DAs in Oregon have stood up and said, stop messing around with the local DA, leave the DA to make the decision who gets charged with crimes and who doesn't. And if they're wrong, like the La Crosse case from the East Coast years ago, right. and they're wrong, then call them out on that. But if they're simply doing the bidding of the county commission, saying, well, there are certain protected people, this begins to sound like Southern justice, doesn't it?
You're right, it does. And frankly, that's what happened for me in 2008. My colleagues did come to my aid. You did, the press generally, and the county commissioners got back down. Two of them were recalled, and a third one was defeated at the polls. So, yes, that kind of pressure can be brought. People have to have the guts to bring that pressure. That means making waves. That means, not making people happy with you. And in Oregon politics, I think there's too much of a desire to get along to go along.
Yeah, unfortunately. Josh, thanks very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
I wish I could keep you around to talk about how we've now found out the Biden DOJ didn't have any probable cause for that Mar-a-Lago warrant, but we'll talk about that another time. That's Josh Markey, the former vice president of the National DA's Association. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Hey there, NW.com. That's FortKnoxNW.com. Take it from me, Fort Knox will keep you safe.
United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and America's largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal law enforcement agencies through our many varied programs, including free safety equipment donations, free officer survival training, cash donations, and condolence letters to the family of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty. USDSA also offers college scholarships for the dependent children of law enforcement, along with the Citizen Awareness Program and thank you cards to law enforcement. These are just some of the ways United States Deputy Sheriff's Association assists America's law enforcement and the citizens they serve. For more information about United States Deputy Sheriff's Association or to see how you can help, visit www.usdeputy.org. United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, taking training to the next level, because lives are on the line.
Larson Show today? Find Lars's thoughts and get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, now we finally find out that that terrible raid on Mar-a-Lago, the president's home, and we were told, well, the FBI is doing it, but they have a warrant. If you know your Constitution and just a tiny bit of the law, and that pretty well describes me, a tiny bit of the law, you understand the government is not allowed to come into your house without a warrant. And what do they need to get a warrant? They need to go to a judge and say to the judge, Your Honor, we have probable cause to believe that there is evidence of a crime and that we will find it when we go into that house. Even within the FBI, it now turns out the emails that have only now come out show that the FBI itself said the August 2022 raid on Mar-a-Lago, the FBI itself said we don't have probable cause. We've worked for 6 weeks to find some evidence that there is something in there that gives us probable cause for this warrant. The FBI admitted they didn't have it. And then they went to a judge and got the warrant anyway, and the rest is history. Let me get into some of the details of that. But first, I want to grab a couple of calls. Ron, thanks for the call. What's on your mind today?
Well, it sounds like Trump needs to get busy doing some Fourth Amendment violations against the judge and the FBI. But the reason I actually called is about Susie Weiss today. Susie Wiles. She's so confused that that they fake news her. You know, Lars, I look at it like this. I've had enough of this. America cannot get rid of fake news when Republicans are going on the show supporting fake news.
I agree.
This needs to stop. These people need
unless,
to complain.
Although, Ron, I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't say, I think people, back in the day when I was invited to go on CNN or MSNBC, I went because I figure if I just go and tell the truth, there won't be any problem there. Now, if you do it without understanding the agenda that's going to be at work when you go on to do the interview, but she apparently described Trump as having some of the characteristics of an adult alcoholic, but not meaning that he drank, just that he had some of the, and apparently when Trump was asked about it today, he said, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. He says that he's, you know, he has this kind of focus that you would maybe find in somebody who's a hardcore alcoholic, even though he just famously doesn't drink. So, you know, he apparently did not take offense. Now, what he said to Susie Wiles, his chief of staff in private, may be something else. But I think there's a way to actually do those interviews with people who are from the fake news media and then just nail them. And you see this happen all the time. There are lots and lots of liberal politicians who get themselves in trouble when they open themselves up to questions. So have you noticed lately that a lot of liberals don't do interviews anymore, and unless they're just going to be guaranteed softballs? Because they know they can't answer the questions. In fact, the mayor of Chicago, I just saw, Brandon Johnson, this joker, he comes out and says, we're going to have this big tax on business, and the business community supports it. And one reporter in Chicago stands up and asks him, can you name one of the businesses that supports your tax? And he got caught. He couldn't name a single business, even though he had just claimed that the business community supported his new tax. That's the craziness we're up against. Let's go to Robson. Hey, Robson, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much. I love your show, and you are such a nice person, and I am so proud to be a part of this. So, Lars, I have a question for you, and I
sure.
Think about this yesterday.
Sure.
Sanctuary states. So they claim being sanctuary states. But in fact, I want to ask you this. I want your advice on this. Is the sanctuary states or is a new kind of, I will be harsh on my word, a camp or a slavery, you know, plantation? Because if you have illegals in those sanctuary states, they cannot leave. They cannot do anything. They are trapped on those estates.
Yep.
I have not seen anything on the sanctuary states that they are helping illegals to become legal.
Well, okay. and there's a problem with that, Robson, because and this is one I've repeated over and over again. I'm not a lawyer, but when I've had immigration lawyers on, I've said to them, if somebody has come into the country illegally, they've entered America illegally, as 10 million came in and stayed during Joe Biden, is there a way to legalize your status? And they will tell you the one way you can legalize your status is go back to your home country, walk into the American embassy or consulate, and apply to enter the United States legally. Is there a way to legalize your status here? And with few rare exceptions for people like asylum seekers or refugees, and that number is limited, you can't legalize your status. And this is one of those things that a lot of the mainstream media will not point out to you. Reporters will say, well, so-and-so was arrested, but he was just he's been working for 10 years to legalize his status. There is no such thing. Those reporters are lying to you through their teeth.
Yes. And then the point is you were talking about the people are hiring foreigners to work in here, and then they got trapped on their
H-1Bs. Yeah, that is a form of indentured servitude.
Correct. So what my point is, this whole story that they put in us is just, and I'm an immigrant. So you're talking about things that happened to me. I was trapped on that, and then they change your wage. It's horrible. And then the same thing, but we don't think about it that sanctuary states, it's a trap. You're not doing anything. It's you're leveraging them to be exploited.
Yep. And they want a couple of things from you. One, cheap labor. Two, votes. Number three, body count. Because when they do a census every 10 years, the federal government figures out how to divvy up the federal spoils. So your state, if it has more people in it, whether they are legal or not, gets more money from the U.S. Congress. That needs to end. So, for example, California has 4 or 5 million people who are in the United States illegally. And yet, those 4 or 5 million people add up to 5 or 6 more members of Congress, 5 or 6 more electoral votes, and more money when it comes time for the Congress. When the Congress says, how much should we send out in school aid? And they look at the number of people and they say, you get this much money because of the number of people you have. The Congress, up till now, they don't care if you're legal or not. And so California is basically using these people as chattel property. They're saying, we own you. You really can't leave because if you leave the sanctuary state, you might get arrested. Oh, and by the way, you mean more money to us. You mean votes, illegal votes to us. And you mean that we get more members of Congress. So California gets overrepresented, and states that are actually honest, Oregon and Washington, do the same kind of game. Oregon would probably, if it lost its illegal aliens in this state, it'd probably lose a member of Congress, and they should. And Washington State, much the same. Thanks for the call. Glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars Larson wants to hear from you, even if you disagree. Naysayers get to cut the line at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. As you know, there was a horrific attack, a terrorist attack. I would call it a jihadi attack, since the two men who committed this attack, one man was shot to death. His son was wounded and is currently being treated at a hospital. But 15 people died and more than 40 people were wounded and had to be treated after the attack at a Hanukkah celebration on Sydney's Bondi Beach. It looks like Bondi when you read it, but it's pronounced Bondi Beach. and it killed 15 people, including a 10-year-old girl. And, of course, the immediate reaction in America from a lot of liberal politicians going all the way up to Capitol Hill was, yeah, they have these strict gun laws, and then Australia is promising to make them even stricter because disarming the entire country really did them a lot of good. Well, I thought we'd talk about that with Dr. Rachel Ehrenfeld, who is author of Funding Evil, the founder and president of the New York-based American Center for Democracy and the Economic Warfare Institute. Dr. Ehrenfeld, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I would like to know what we should make of the fact that there are apparently people in our country, I'm not one of them, who believe that more gun laws will stop terrorism and attacks like what happened in Sydney, Australia.
That's silly. It's really idiotic. Guns don't shoot themselves by themselves. The people who should be held accountable are the people who are actually using the trigger, pushing the trigger in order to shoot people. So, actually, if there would have been some people with guns among the people who were celebrating Hanukkah at Bondi Beach, maybe they could have used it and stopped the killing before too many people have really died. It is interesting that the we saw, actually, videos. People took videos with their phones and photos with their phones. And we saw policemen, which turned out actually to be police women, Australians from Sydney, hiding while the shooting was going on.
Yep.
And for 10 minutes, there was nobody tried to stop anything. So this is completely outrageous. Also, why wasn't there more security? Why weren't there more policemen when it was known to them that there will be a Hanukkah event on the beach and there will be many Jews coming to the event, especially since Australia had really experienced a lot of anti-Semitism since more anti-Semitism, increased level and number of anti-Semitic attacks since October 7, 2023. But I have to tell you that when I was in Australia many, many, many years ago, in 1991, I have witnessed both in Sydney and in Melbourne Palestinian demonstrations, big Palestinian demonstrations calling to the destruction of Israel. And there were no police around in either places. And I was visiting there. I couldn't believe my eyes. So and ever since then, there has been the number of anti-Israeli demonstrations, number of attacks on Jewish targets have increased. As I said, especially after October 7, 2023, and the police did nothing.
And what explains that? Why would they? I mean, this is a government that was willing to disarm millions of its own people, and they did what they called a gun buyback, although the government had never owned those guns. So they were confiscating the guns and giving a token payment to everybody they confiscated property from. But they did that. And if they're willing to go that far to disarm law-abiding citizens, why won't they do more to protect people against these kinds of acts of terrorism when they know that there is an anti-Semitic, anti-Israel current that's going through not just Australia, but the United States as well?
United States, Europe, it's around the world. And it is, and they were actually, Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, has read actually out loud a letter that he sent to Albanese, the Labour Prime Minister, that looks and sounds weak and is weak, and infectious warnings back in August this year, warning him that there will be attacks, that he should do something more to protect the Jewish community and stop anti-Semitism because it will affect all Australians. Well, he was right. And we don't know yet if among those who were wounded or killed were also non-Jews. But we know that the ISIS members that did the shooting, the father and his son, 24-year-old son, have been targeting with hunting weapons. They were targeting the Jewish community that gathered to celebrate Hanukkah.
And even though they were on the radar of the police, if you will, they didn't see any need to disarm them and say, hey, you know, we're concerned about what you might do.
The father had six weapons. So he got license to have a weapon. But six weapons? Why does one person need six weapons at home?
Well, Dr. Ehrenfeld, you're asking the wrong person that, because I have a lot more than six. But in the hands of law-abiding people, I could have 500 guns. I don't. But if I did, it wouldn't make any difference because it's not, as you pointed out at the beginning, it's not the gun that does the crime. No. It's the individual behind it.
Yeah. Besides, you can limit the number of guns or prevent guns from citizens. It doesn't mean that criminals and jihadists will not get guns. They usually do.
Yep.
And usually illegally too. So this is silly. And what they should have done is increase security. But instead, the Prime Minister of Australia, and the Prime Minister of Great Britain, of the Prime Minister of France and Germany, all of them are suffering a great deal. Every day there are murders, there are rapes, there are robberies, there are attacks on regular citizens in their countries, not necessarily on Jews, they are afraid of the Muslim minority that is in their country.
Exactly, because they're worried that the Muslims will get angry. You know what? I think it's time to stop worrying about the point of view of the Muslims and simply enforce the law on everyone. That's Dr. Rachel Ehrenfeld. Doctor, thank you very much.
If you don't want to talk but want to be heard, email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. He actually will read it. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, this is a difficult time of year because Christmas is coming up in 9 days. And boy, does this put liberals and Democrats and progressives in an odd spot. And I'll give you a great example of that in one of Oregon's two U.S. senators. I guess I should say the only one, because Senator Jeff Merkley at least lives in the state of Oregon, whereas Senator Ron Wyden lives 3,000 miles away in New York City. But let me get into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to the program. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. If you're a naysayer, we put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. And I'll get to the X-Poll in a moment. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com. For an instant offer to sell your home immediately, no showings, no hassles, and you get to pick the closing date, NickShivers.com will get you all the details. Now, our X-Poll question. Do you get your money's worth from Northwest governments? Now, my answer to that is no. Just right off the bat, no. But let me give you some new ammunition for that point of view. It was posted by Oregon State Representative Ed Deal today. He says Oregon government takes more of your money than most other states in America. So how do they measure that? Well, they take the entire government spending in a given state, and then they divide by the number of people in the state, and what you come up with is per capita spending. In other words, the state of Oregon is the fifth biggest spender in America. It is not the fifth biggest state. The state of Oregon has just over 1% of the U.S. population. Washington State is closer to 2%. But the state of Oregon is fifth in per capita spending. They spend money to beat the band. California comes in at number four, just barely ahead of the state of Oregon. And then Washington State comes in at 15th. Meantime, the good example for everybody who cares about restraining the amount of money spent by government, Idaho. They come in at the 49th highest level. Now, if you travel around the region, and Tina and I do, you go to the state of Idaho. Do you see that they're lacking in anything important like law enforcement or roads or parks or schools or anything else? Actually, in a lot of ways, they do a better job than the states of Oregon and Washington. And yet they are 49th in spending, and they still produce the things that their people need. So do you get your money's worth from Northwest government? I would answer no. You can answer the question any way you like. You'll find the X poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, boy, what a solid result. I asked you this after what happened in Australia at Bondi Beach. Should we demand the death penalty for the worst acts of terrorism? Of course, those that happen in the United States, because that's what the United States law affects, not Bondi Beach in Australia. Should we demand the death penalty for the worst acts of terrorism? Only 1% of our voters came out with a no vote. 99% of you said yes to that idea. In any case, glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. I want to point this out to you. The left does not seem to know what to do with Christmas. And I'm convinced that most of the people on the far left in America, and especially here in the Pacific Northwest, one of the least churched regions in America, they don't know what to do with Christmas. And I think they'd just as soon be done with it. I mean, they don't mind that government workers get a holiday on Christmas or that it is a federal holiday. I think what they don't like is that it is the Christmas holidays. And let me offer up as evidence of this, Senator Jeff Merkley's, as described by Jason Williams at Oregon Catalyst and the Taxpayers Association, ultra-sanitized Christmas-free greeting. He says somebody sent us their Christmas card that they got from Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Apparently, I'm not on Jeff Merkley's Christmas card list, but don't hold that against me. He says the main greeting shows no mention of Christmas, no mention of holidays, no mention of Hanukkah. It doesn't even offer up a season's greeting. Christmas has now been reduced to just adjectives. Next year, Merkley may describe the time as lights, gifts, and decoration. What does it actually say on the front of Senator Jeff Merkley's, well, sort of Christmas card? Love, peace, and joy with hope for the future. That's the sum total of his Christmas greeting for the people who voted him into office. He says that, or Jason says, the fact that our elected leaders and the public celebrate cultural religious traditions is a sign of a society's healthy free expression. When we deculture ourselves, we lose our identity, we lose our shared experiences, and we send messages that free speech is what you only do inside your home where it cannot be seen by other people who might disagree. Can you imagine a U.S. senator fearful of mentioning the word Christmas or Hanukkah or holiday? He wants to send something so generic, love, peace, and joy with hope for the future, and no mention of Christmas at all. I mean, these are the kinds of people that lead to things like, for instance, the city of Portland infamously putting up its holiday tree, except they don't call it the holiday tree or the Christmas tree, which is clearly what it is. They just simply call it the tree. So we've put up the tree. We are now tree worshipers. That's the kind of nonsense. These are the people who've forgotten that this country was founded by Christians who decided to say, let's have a country where everyone is free to practice whatever faith they want or no faith at all. Now imagine the kind of courage it took, because they could have said, we're going to make ourselves a Christian nation and only Christians are welcome here. They did not do that. There were a few states that tried the idea of saying maybe we should require that you be of the Christian faith to be able to run for office or vote or own property, things like that. That was quickly shouted down. And in fact, the U.S. Constitution makes it clear there can't even be a religious test of office. I mean, if you believed that only Christians can run for public office, well, then you've never met Ilhan Omar, have you? You've never met Rashida Tlaib, have you? But there are people in our government, it's kind of amazing that voters would choose them. But if somebody says, I don't want to vote for you unless you're of a particular faith, that is their right as an American citizen. And the idea that a U.S. senator would be afraid of allowing the C word, Christmas, to actually be on his Christmas card, so he sends something out generic, love, peace, and joy, with hope for the future. I hope that Senator Merkley is replaced by somebody sensible as Oregon's representative in the United States Senate. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I know we get some bizarre ideas out of the people in government, especially those in government who are in charge of deciding how much we pay in taxes. And no, I'm not talking about the IRS or the Department of Revenue. I'm talking about the individual politicians, and almost all of them Democrats, who have never been satisfied. They're like my dog with treats. If you hand him 10 treats, he'll eat them all and want more. That's Democrats when it comes to taxes. As far as I'm concerned, they are lazy dogs, because they think they're entitled to a certain percentage of your income. And never was that more clear than in the emails and a communications document that shows leadership of the Washington State Senate Democrats say, we have been defunded because we're not getting our usual cut of everybody's total personal income of around 7%. I thought we'd ask Ryan Frost about that. He serves as director of budget and tax policy at the Washington Policy Center. Ryan, welcome back to the program. And what gives the Democrats, anybody, the idea that they're entitled to a fixed percentage of everybody's total income?
Thanks, Larson. I think that's a great question, because anybody who's paid attention to Olympia spending has seen, just because that, you know, maybe that share of total income has gone down that they're collecting, their spending sure has not decreased. It's rapidly expanded. It's tripled over the last 12 years. So I think
Hold on a second, Ryan. I want that to sink in for folks. It has tripled over the last 12 years. So if it has gone up 200% in 12 years, then the money that the state is getting is roughly, has increased roughly 18-19% per year, because that would almost seem to require that people saw their incomes go up 18 or 19% per year. And I can tell you mine hasn't, and I would imagine most of the people listening to this have not.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look at all the money that Olympia has spent, in 2012 it was about $30 billion. In 2025 we're approaching $95 billion that the state is spending. And the argument for these tax increases is what they're pushing, as you mentioned. They're pushing for, well, historically the state has gotten about 6 to 7% of your total income. Now we only get 5. So basically, as Washingtonians earn more money, they think they should get a proportional cut of that increase.
And why? I mean, do they offer anything like, well, we made that happen? Or does this all go back to that old nonsense from, you know, Pocahontas that, you know, you didn't actually build that. We all built it. And so as a result, we're entitled to a share of whatever you make. Is that the kind of thinking they're engaging in?
That's exactly what it is. There's no rational reasoning behind it. It's simply that they feel that state services are not keeping up because they're not collecting as much money, when anybody who pays attention to the state budget has seen this rapid growth in spending. And the argument just doesn't make sense to any of us.
Well, and Ryan, back me up on this. When they talk about, you know, the spending on state services, 80% of that, roughly, is salaries to people who are working for the state. Am I right? About 80%, or is it higher?
Definitely the largest increase in the state budget. The reason that we just passed a $9 billion tax increase, you know, $5.5 billion of that went to state employee salaries. We started out early last session talking about public employees taking a furlough day once a month to save the state money, and that turned around to not only are we not going to furlough state employees once a day, we're actually going to give them $5 billion in employee raises.
Okay, and see, Ryan, you know what I'd like? I'd like a Walmart-style government. We supply a service. That's what we're here for. We're a service provider. We're not entitled to a slice of your income. In fact, if anything, I mean, I happen to know, not because I have any involvement with the company financially, but I've asked before and I've researched it, Walmart makes a return of about 2.5%. I mean, they serve all the people that they serve. You know, they provide a service. People clearly want their service. They buy a lot of stuff at Walmart, and Walmart gets a 2.5% cut. I wish we had a state that said, you know, we're providing all the services that people actually want from government, and we're only charging 3% of their income instead of 6% or 5% or whatever the number is now.
Yeah, that would make the most sense. And to top it off, the state already collects more revenue when people make more money or when the population increases. Every new resident pays property taxes. They pay the sales taxes when they shop. You know, that's already baked into the system. And so basically what they're saying is as people are making more money or the population's growing, they're getting worse at their job.
And yet they can't really point to anything and say, you know, we're the ones who made it possible for you to make more money, because they're supposed to just supply essential services that government does, that the private sector really can't. I mean, a road system and a public school system that they don't run very well at all, policing, courts, cops, things like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And if you look at, I mean, thankfully we do have, you know, the best case study possible in the state is, well, when you raise taxes on people or on businesses, what happens? And Seattle has shown us very clearly what happens when you do the things that this new document is pushing for.
Okay, and you're reading this, that this new document is their attempt to justify, since we're only getting 5% of state personal income, and we used to get 7, we should be able to increase taxes. That would be by 40% or so, right?
That's right. Yeah, and again, as you mentioned, the reasoning is completely unclear. We've rapidly expanded because of the clear decision how much money goes to education. We spend almost $19,000 per pupil in this state on education. And as you mentioned,
with terrible very results.
Little, that's right. Very little in the way of discernible improvement for the extra money we're spending. And so you have to ask, and this is a question that I really want to dig into, is where is all this extra funding going then? If, you know, our budget's tripled, what are all these new programs that are being spent that the legislature now needs to raise taxes even more to pay for?
And because
somebody who's lived here, I don't see, you know, I'm not seeing them.
No, and I'm not seeing it either. And in fact, if anything, if they said, look, by spending all this money, we've been able to make it a better climate for kids in school, which it's not, or a better climate to start a business or run a business, and it's not, or because our roads are in such great repair, and they're not. I mean, in other words, on almost any measure that the citizens might make, I mean, if you stay in a nice hotel, the conditions are very nice. If you stay in a cheap hotel, not so good. Old carpet, bad paint, et cetera, et cetera. But if you say, I'm paying Hilton hotel prices, or maybe for Seattle, Fairmont prices, and I'm getting Motel 6 quality, that doesn't work because I know how to do the math. If you're getting, you know, need to wipe it out. American Financing customers are saving an average of $800 a month, with some getting rates in the low fives, a massive difference compared to credit cards charging 20% or more. Talk to a salary-based mortgage consultant and find out exactly what you qualify for. There are never any upfront fees, just to find out how much you could save. Move quickly, and you could even delay 2 mortgage payments. That puts more cash in your pocket right now, giving you back some money you spent during the holidays. Call American Financing today. The sooner you act, the quicker you can save. 503-452-4444. That's 452-4444. AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. APR for rates in the five start at 6.196.
A powerful threat calls for a greater response.
When there's a battle, bring strength.
When there's a problem, seek answers.
When there is doubt, give hope.
Not tomorrow.
Not in a few years.
But right now.
Some battles must be faced together. Cancer fighters stand up to cancer every day. And you can be part of this battle too.
Visit standuptocancer.org to learn more.
Together, we can save lives.
Interviews, podcasts, local and national news. Get it all at LarsLarsen.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. Should the FBI reopen the investigation into the Clinton Foundation now that memos show it was deliberately slow-walked until the statute of limitations ran out? Or is it simply too late for justice? I always promised you that when I disagree with President Trump, that I'll be happy to say so. I've had more cause to do that more recently than I have in a long, long time. But I'm very frustrated about this because you might remember back to some of the first rallies that Donald Trump held after his first term in office when Hillary Clinton's name would come up and the crowd would start chanting, lock her up. And President Trump actually supported that idea that she should be locked up. I think that Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton broke the law. I'm not going to be, you know, a lot of people who call this show who have a gripe about Donald Trump, they'll say he's a liar. I say, tell me your most famous lie that you know of. I can tell you the things that I think that Hillary and Bill Clinton did that broke the law. But let me dig into this because there are some brand new memos that have come out just this week, thanks to our friend John Solomon, the guy, one of the best investigative reporters in America, and he's a good friend of this show. He founded justthenews.com, and he breaks a lot of these stories there. But let me get into those details in a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we'll put you right to the head of the list. We love naysayers on this program, and you can call the same number. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our X poll today, do you get your money's worth from government? And I would answer no to that one, but you can look into that one if you like. I think it's a fairly fascinating question. So should the Clintons face charges? It may not even be legally possible for them, but let me remind you of a deal that was cut. And it was a sleazy deal that Hillary Clinton took part in because at the time, Barack Hussein Obama was president. Joe Biden was his vice president and also the point man for Ukraine and China. And I don't think that was a coincidence. But Hillary Clinton was serving, if you can call it that, as Secretary of State. Now, nobody much remembers anything that she actually did as Secretary of State except get on airplanes and fly about 2 million miles during her time as America's representative. The Secretary of State is, of course, the president's representative when it comes to foreign policy. But what was she doing during all that time? One of the things she was doing was signing off on the sale of a company called Uranium One. Now, what you should know about Uranium One is that Uranium One was the single largest stake of uranium reserves owned by an American company. And there was a proposal, and they went through with the proposal, to sell that company to a Russian state-owned company. So in other words, this was Hillary, and it required Hillary Clinton's sign-off as Secretary of State. Because things like that, that rise to that kind of level, whether national security interests, American security interests, because if you're talking about selling off some of our biggest uranium reserves, that's going to have certain implications when it comes to the safety and security, not just of energy, but also of nuclear weapons for this country. So that kind of sale requires the sign-off of the Secretary of State. And it got the sign-off of Hillary Clinton. And then right after that, and I don't think this was a coincidence either, right after the Russians announced that they were going to acquire a majority stake in Uranium One, Bill Clinton got an invitation to give a speech in Moscow. He got the invitation from an investment bank in Russia that has links to the Kremlin that was promoting Uranium One stock. And they said, Bill, would you come over and give a speech? We'll put you on a nice airplane. We'll fly you over. You'll give a speech for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, take a few questions, stay a nice night in a hotel. I don't know what other provisions they may have made for Clinton, because when he travels, he travels in a lot of ways. And then we'll pay you $500,000 to give a single speech. Again, I don't think that was a coincidence. I think that was pay for play. Now, of course, Joe Biden was arranging pay for play while he was in office as vice president. That's why he asked Obama to make him the point man for China, where the Biden crime family made a lot of money, and also for Ukraine, where the Biden crime family made a lot of money, thanks to President Otto Penn. But the Clintons were cleaning up. They got huge donations to the Clinton Foundation. And a lot of us said, this is dirty dealing. When you sell, effectively sell the Secretary of State's signature on a deal like this, and you pay her husband $500,000 just to stand up and shoot his mouth off for an hour, that smells like pay to play. So, what happened? Well, the latest developments, and John Solomon did these at Just the News, and these just came out last night. Federal investigators believe there was significant evidence worth pursuing to possible criminal involvement of the Clinton Foundation and the State Department's approval of the sale of Uranium One to Russia, well, to Russian interests that were controlled by the Kremlin. Career agents and line prosecutors at the FBI and the DOJ believed the saga may have been criminal. But orders from DOJ leaders like then Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, her name comes up time and again, and of course the other guy, this guy's a real sleazy character, FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, they slow-walked the whole inquiry. They stonewalled it to the point where they couldn't pursue it anymore. They simply waited until the statute of limitations ran out, and then they said, well, we can't do anything about this. The New York Times in 2015, a decade ago, said as the Russians gradually assumed control of Uranium One in three different deals, a flow of cash made its way to the Clinton Foundation. Uranium One's chairman used his family foundation to make donations totaling $2.3 million. Those contributions were not publicly disclosed by the Clintons, even though Mrs. Clinton had struck a deal with the Obama White House to publicly identify all of her donors. She didn't do it. Now, do you know why she didn't do it? Because if you said, yeah, I'm the Secretary of State, I signed off on the deal to sell America's important uranium reserves to a Russian-controlled company, and then my husband got paid $500,000, and more than $2 million went into the Clinton Family Foundation, that people might think something. Well, the DOJ and the FBI thought it was criminal. And then, because of key people within the FBI and the DOJ, they simply took their time, and then they said, sorry. We've now eclipsed the statute of limitations. I think that Donald Trump's DOJ should do its best to look at every aspect of this and find out whether there were crimes or conspiracies involving the Clintons that would allow some kind of prosecution to be pursued. Hillary Clinton really does richly deserve to be locked up.
The Lars Larson Show. Something to say? Give Lars a call at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. My upcoming guest says that America is very much at risk of losing a quarter millennia of investment in liberty to division. Has America squandered 250 years of freedom, and is there still time to save it? Mike Biedenbaugh joins me now, who is the author of Reviving Our Republic, 95 Theses for the Future of America. Mike, welcome to the program, and Merry Christmas in advance.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, Lars. Thank you for having me on.
And by the way, thanks for your service in the United States Navy. We appreciate that, certainly. But tell me why you see America at risk of losing all of its legacy.
Because we, over the past, I would say, 50 years, especially since World War II, we have forgotten the systems it takes to create a free republic with checks and balances in our search for being a world hegemonic power. You can't have one and have the other not be compromised. And it's time we start realizing that the systems we put in place since the 1950s are failing us. And I'm talking government systems in the sense of checks and balances and those sort of issues that ensure federalism works where local has certain sovereignty and the feds have others. We have to get back to that, or we're existing in the type of world we're existing in now, where division is centered around Washington's policies.
Yeah, because I think the federal government has far too large a role in our daily lives and the decisions made at the state level, and the founders never intended that when they put in a limited government with certain enumerated powers, did they?
No, they didn't. But they also didn't expect something as powerful as an income tax that would take so much wealth from everybody and representatives that would encourage states to lessen their taxing authority, because then the representatives can get power by bringing money back to communities from the federal government. When I ran as an independent for Congress, almost every mayor in my district I was running in asked, well, what money are you going to bring back to us? It's become a sales job. And yeah, it's amazing.
Well, I mean, but what do we do to reconfigure America so we can actually have those checks and balances? The U.S. federal government stays in its lane, and the states stay in their lane, and both of them try to maximize the freedoms and liberties of individual citizens instead of trying to control every last thing we do, which seems to be the agenda not just on Capitol Hill and in D.C., but it seems to be the agenda at your local state house as well.
Yeah, it is. And so, there are several things that have to happen. We need a triggering event, and things are getting so dysfunctional. And I'm afraid they're going to get worse before they get better. But there will be a point where hopefully people will wake up and realize we have to look at our nation a different way than we have been the past 50 years. And so I have in my book, I utilize for inspiration Washington's farewell address. And he basically gave his farewell address a statement of an owner's manual for the republic. He basically said, here's what you do to keep the republic the way we've created for you. And I just was astonished at how many of those lessons have been ignored. So I took out 40 policy points and put them in my book with the 95 theses to argue why they're important, and then put them in there. And, you know, it has to do with getting money out of politics, out of representation, which means certain, constitutional amendments, as well as corporatism, the collusion of corporations and government, which no one 100 years ago, 100 years ago they did. But when the Constitutional Convention was put together, they had no idea the power corporations would have on this continent.
Okay, so where do we start? When you mentioned a triggering event, are you seeing this that we would have to make a number of big changes all at once, or could this be done incrementally?
I think it would have to be several big changes at once, a whole reformation system, because here's the big one, and this is, I think, one of the ones most important to get big money out of politics, is to recognize that there is a difference between natural persons, citizens, and artificial personas, corporations and trusts. And because the Constitution doesn't differentiate that, it's why the Supreme Court, being mostly textualists and originalists, felt like legally they couldn't do anything else but judge Citizens United the way they did.
Yep.
Because the Constitution doesn't differentiate it. Well, instead of complaining and politicizing the Supreme Court, people should just say, okay, if that's the way the rules are, let's fix the Constitution to fix that part.
But that means, am I right in meaning that means changing the First Amendment And then how do you set those limits? Because when most people think of corporations, they're thinking of Nike or Boeing or Intel or Caterpillar Tractor. But corporations also include people or entities like labor unions. And you're going to say to the labor unions, by the way, who are some of the biggest donors in politics, that you can't give money as a labor union. Your individual members are free to give what you want, but you can't do it as an organization.
No, that's right. And that's what it means. And it also means, in coupling with that, is the fact that when I ran for as an independent, everybody agreed with me on that. I had as many conservatives as liberals supporting me. And it was because of concepts like this. If you can give money to a candidate, that's perfectly fine. But we should set it to where only person that can vote for you is the people that can give you money.
And then the second question is, can that individual give as much as they want? Because right now, every American is limited in how much they can give. So, and they say, well, that's fair because rich people could give more and poor people could not give as much. But would you also limit the individual citizen in how much they could give to a candidate?
You know, I honestly don't know that. I think that's part of the discussion we need to have. The purpose of my book is to start discussions.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I do know I have the questions that no one else is asking, and it's not being engaged on the House floor and in public forum. So that's what this book is, a recipe book for what discussions we need to have to get to the right place. I personally don't mind it being a high level. I just know it also has to be exposed. You have to list who your donors are.
Period. So does that mean, real quick, before we have to break, does that mean also you would take organizations that people belong to? So you belong to the Sierra Club on one side, or you belong to the NRA on the other side. Would those organizations also be limited in what they could give?
I don't address that in the book, but I don't think so, because I think it's dangerous for us to assume whatever organization we're in. I mean, you could be a member of multiple organizations.
Yeah, you could. And in that case, can those organizations give? That's Mike Biedenbach, who is a Navy veteran and the author of Reviving Our Republic. Mike, thank you very much, and Merry Christmas. If the poll today, do you get your money's worth from Northwest governments? I would argue you do not. Now, you're free to believe whatever you want, but I've pointed out that Representative Ed Deal of Oregon, he's an Oregon representative, says that Oregon government takes more of your money than most every other state. Not every other state, but most of them. Oregon now ranks fifth in per capita spending on state and local government. Number six would be Washington, D.C. Number four would be California. Washington State, on the other hand, is at 15th on that list, and Idaho is at 49th. There's only one state that does a better job of supplying services to citizens and taking less of your money to spend on state and local government. And yet, I don't notice that the people of Idaho say, well, we're not being properly served by our government, even though they spend one of the lowest expenditures per capita in all of America. So knowing that the state of Oregon is number five in state and local government spending in America, Washington State is 15th, do you get your money's worth from Northwest governments? I would argue no. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's poll, should we demand the death penalty for the worst acts of terrorism? I asked the question because of what had happened at Bondi Beach in Australia, although we have seen acts of terrorism in our country. And in fact, just yesterday, the FBI announced that they had broken up a group that planned to do bombings on New Year's Eve in the Los Angeles area. So we have acts of terrorism in this country. Should the worst of them be punished with the death penalty? 99% of you said yes to that question, and only 1% of you said no to that question. Oh, and then this. Lately, I've been seeing a lot of coverage about the fact that able-bodied adults must work or lose their food stamps. Now, I know a lot of you who are conservatives say, well, Lars, duh. I mean, if you're not going to go out and at least work and try to provide something of your own support, and remember who we're talking about here, 37,000 able-bodied adults. So these are people without disabilities. They are adults. They are not children. They are not the elderly. They are working-age adults, 18 to 64. And the new rules that came down from the Trump administration said, if you have an able-bodied adult and that adult has no children to be responsible for, whether a man or a woman, you have no disabilities, you're not a child and you're not a senior, you should go out and get a job. And you should get a job at least 20 hours a week, 80 hours every month. That's half time. So you just have to work a part-time job and you qualify for food stamps. And every single story I've seen done on this in the last 2 days, and that includes even some of my friends over at the NBC affiliate, KGW, everyone is a boo-hoo story. Oh, my goodness. How would we expect this able-bodied young man or woman who has no children, has no responsibilities, is not a child, is not elderly, doesn't have a physical disability, and he just wants to sit and collect his food stamps, and he doesn't want to have to be bothered to work 20 hours a week, 4 hours a day, Monday through Friday, or whatever schedule you arrange. And why there are 37,000 of these poor souls who are going to be cut off from their food stamps if they don't go out and get a part-time job or start going to school or taking training. Any of those things would qualify you. All of those new rules are part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that was passed in July by the United States Congress, signed into law by President Trump. Now, the people behind the law say the cuts are necessary to prevent waste, fraud, and abuse. Opponents say the savings on food aid from people kicked off the program are supposed to bolster spending on immigration enforcement, the military, and tax cuts. Yeah, I can go for that. I see no problem with that whatsoever. And in fact, I would love to have a naysayer call me and say, why, my son is 35 and he likes living in my basement. And he likes eating out of my refrigerator. And he watches my big screen TV and plays video games all day. Why are you haranguing him and saying that he has to go out and work a little bit, half time, to be able to qualify for those food stamps? Do you know what? In all the time we've talked about this since the bill was passed in July, I haven't had a single naysayer defend the idea of some deadbeat young man or woman living in some way and getting by in some way with no job whatsoever, no job, no kids, no disability, not elderly, not a child. And yet, is there anybody out there who would defend that? In fact, I'll bet some of the people listening to this show right now are parents who kind of wish their son or daughter, who is an adult, who should be earning their own keep, who is not disabled, does not have children, I'll bet some of them wish some of those kids would get off the couch, put down the video game, and go find a job. And you know what happened at that point? If they decide not to do that, we're not going to buy their groceries anymore. Okay, I think that's fair. And if they do go out and get a job, at some point, they might actually be able to earn a living for themselves and not be forever dependent on the government. Can anybody find a reason not to like that idea? I do want to mention this, though. I saw some good news today. There is a company out of Houston that is considering buying and reopening the garbage-burning incinerator in Brooks, Oregon. You see the big stack as you're driving down I-5 from, say, Woodburn to Salem. It's on the east side of Interstate 5. That thing got closed down earlier this year. Now, you would think the greenies would love this because you're turning garbage into energy. And you're disposing of the garbage so you don't have to haul it 100 miles to a landfill and bury it in the ground. You would think there'd be everything to like about that idea. Well, Houston-based Peaker Energy is considering buying and reopening the incinerator. Makes all kinds of sense to me. I'm sure that the Oregon environmental authorities will do everything they can to make sure that does not happen. Glad to be with you and glad to take your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.